Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make it fall. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Revelation and will be continuing today with part 2 of The Sealed of Israel. So let's turn in our Bibles to Revelation chapter 7 verse 9 as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
Now after these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude which no one could number, of all nations, tribes, peoples, and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes, with palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." All the angels stood around the throne and the elders and the four living creatures and fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, saying, "Amen." And so they said, "Blessing and glory and wisdom, thanksgiving, honor, power, and might be to our God forever and ever." True. It is true. I like that understanding of the word. Then one of the elders answered, saying to me, "Who are these arrayed in white robes, and where did they come from?" And I said to him, "Sir, you know." So he said to me, "These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation and washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. And therefore they are before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple." Now, see here, I think we have, again, a clear distinction between those in the fifth chapter and this group here. And they have an exclusive ministry now of serving God in his temple day and night. Now, the church, according to passages that we read earlier, the church is going to be ruling and reigning with Christ on the earth during the kingdom age. But this group is going to be serving God day and night in his temple. And I think it's clearly a reference to the temple in heaven rather than any temple here on earth. "And he who sits on the throne will dwell among them, and they shall neither hunger anymore nor thirst anymore. The sun shall not strike them nor any heat." So notice that it seems to me in verse 16 that these are the things that they were suffering while they were living here on the earth during the tribulation. They were suffering from hunger and from thirst and from exposure and that sort of thing. And we know that there's a point where the sun is going to be heated up, as we can read about in the 16th chapter. "For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." So John sees this other group in heaven now. And these are the ones that are coming out of the tribulation period. "When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayer of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. Now, it's a hard thing for us to understand, but remember, John is seeing both worlds. He's been transported in the spirit into the future, to this day of the Lord. And the veil, if you will, has been pulled back, and John sees both worlds. Now, both worlds exist, but we can't see both of them. We only see the one world, the material world that we live in. But we know by experience that there's something else that's going on. There's something going on in the invisible realm. We know by experience, we know because the scriptures tell us that is the case, that we are in a conflict between the principalities and the powers. We know that nations and kingdoms and peoples are ruled by powerful spiritual forces. But you see, we know that by faith. We know that because of what the scriptures tell us, and to some degree because of what we experience. But for John, everything has been opened up wide, and he can see both worlds. He can see the activity of these angels and what they're doing with this censer and these prayers, all of this mixed together, and this censer being thrown to the earth. I don't think anybody on the earth is going to see the censer hit the earth when it hits the earth. It's happening in the spiritual realm, but they will indeed experience the result of that happening. So when we're reading through the book of Revelation, we have to understand that that's what's going on here. John is, he's telling us about both worlds, and he's describing the invisible world that's now become visible to him. He's describing it to us in the best terms that he can. So the first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. So now we had first of all, you see, the judgment is coming in increments. We had first of all in the seals, we had a fourth that was destroyed. So the population and the vegetation, these different things have been reduced by a quarter. Now what's remaining, the three-fourths, is going to be reduced by another third. So we read there in regard to the fourth seal that when death and Hades came forth, a fourth of the earth's population dies as a result of this. But now we move from the fourths down to the thirds. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. So again, John sees the spiritual world colliding with the physical world. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. Now, the plagues in Egypt and the judgments that come upon the world, there's an interesting connection. Each of those things that God judged in Egypt were part of the hierarchy of deities that the Egyptians worshiped. So as God was bringing forth these judgments upon the Nile, turning the water into blood. You remember how we read about that. And when he's bringing the frogs on the land and the lice and all of these different things, you see, each one of these things, God was exercising his authority over the deities of Egypt. These were all the things that the Egyptians worshipped. And God was showing his superiority over these things. You know, it's interesting. We are living in a time when there is a return in a major way to nature worship. I mean, we've got crazy legislation protecting bugs and protecting all kinds of animals and varmints. And, you know, it's just absolutely nuts. But it's not anything less than an idolatry of nature. It is a neo-paganism. The pagans, of course, it's a word that comes from the peasants, and it refers to the peasants' religion. The peasants worshipped nature. And that's what we see. We see a revival of the worship of nature going on in our culture today. And again, like I'm saying, it is being legislated. And so if you, you know, get too close to some birds and scare them away, they'll handcuff you and take you to jail. You disrupted their nest or something like that. It's craziness. God, in this tribulation period, is bringing a judgment upon all of the things that man worships. All of the things that man worships, excluding God. You know, the craziness of man, the insanity of man is here. You know, we live on this planet that God created, and every single thing we know and experience that is pleasant, pleasurable, enjoyable, helpful, healthful, whatever the case, it's all been given to us by God. But what happens with many, they stand up, shake their fist into the air and say, there is no God. I'm God. But one of the things you see when you listen to the spokesman for the new atheism, you listen to what they're saying. They have a great hostility toward God, and they speak as though the world belongs to them and it's ours, and we are scientists and philosophers, and they have this venom toward God. And then, you know, all of this speculation. I think it's the height of folly for a man who will live, let's say, a maximum 120 years to sit around and pontificate about millions or billions of years. What kind of insanity is that? Or, you know, to sit here on this planet and say, this planet is nothing, just a little speck. Anybody could create a planet like this. It's poorly designed. Or to sit there in your body saying, this is nothing. This eye is a joke. It's very poorly designed. The lens is backward. If there's really a God, he's really not a very good designer. So I can, you know, when you listen to this stuff, you just think, man, if I were God, I would just. But, you know, people wonder, well, you know, I don't like this idea about God judging and, you know, people going to hell and all of this. You know what? Men and women, we are rebels. Man is a rebel against his creator. Man is a rebel who says, I don't care what you say, God. I'm going to do it my own way, and I'm going to do my best to just try to pretend like you don't exist. Man does not want there to be a God to tell him he can't sleep with this person, that person, or the other person. And the greatest spokesmen for atheism have themselves pretty much said that. But this judgment, God once again, like he did in Egypt. Now, Egypt was just a picture. The judgment on Pharaoh in Egypt was a picture, a small-scale version of the judgment that will come ultimately upon the entire planet and all of the gods that men have worshipped in substitute of the true and the living God. And that is what we are reading about here. You know, at one time, the earth was perceived to be at the center of the universe, and that was not a biblical idea. It was a Greek idea. Aristotle and Ptolemy had that idea. And for centuries, that was the view. And then Copernicus came along and started to shake that view up a little bit. And then Galileo came on later and brought some new information. And then eventually the view changed to the heliocentric view. Heliocentric meaning the sun is at the center, not the earth at the center. And that because the earth was no longer perceived to be at the center of things, certain people took that not just scientifically in regard to the heavenly bodies, but certain people took it and said, well, if the earth's not at the center of the universe, like we've been told, then man must not be as significant as we once thought he was. And then with the introduction of Darwinism and all of that, and the idea that everything is all connected, everything just evolved, the whole point was to throw man out of the center as being created in the image of God. And when man is thrown out of the center as being created in the image of God, then man is no more value than any other creature. And so we live in a culture where people have great compassion for baby seals who are being bashed over the head for their furs, but couldn't care less about baby human beings being sucked out of the wombs of women through abortion. This is the world we're living in, and God is going to bring his judgment upon the living creatures, upon the rivers of water, all of these things that men worship. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth because of the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. So we are right here in the thick of this judgment that's coming. And then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star, notice, fallen, past tense, from heaven to the earth. And now listen, to him. So John previously saw a star that struck the waters, but now he uses the same terminology, but he's speaking of not an inanimate object, he's speaking of a person as a star. He's speaking of the devil. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Think about this. Now, listen, the book of Revelation is not entirely symbolic. It uses plenty of symbolic language, but it uses symbolic language to describe literal events. And what we're reading about here, here's the symbolic part of it. I saw a star falling from heaven. But the star is actually a reference to Satan himself. There is a bottomless pit that's going to be opened up. Strange thought that somewhere here on the earth, there is a pit. And in that pit, there are demonic beings that are incarcerated. This is weird stuff, but it's real stuff. Isn't it interesting? You probably don't go to a lot of movies. I don't either. But you know, it's like more and more the movies that are coming out, they're all incorporating all of this supernatural stuff. Do you notice that? It's rare today to see just a good old-fashioned cowboy movie or something like that, you know. Or just a good old-fashioned love story. It's got all of this weird stuff that's connected to it. All of this spiritual stuff. All of this weird, now they wouldn't call it demonic necessarily. Some, in some cases they would. But it's this interaction with the spirit world. And this is what's being portrayed to us over and over all the time. And this is happening on the level of major motion pictures. It's happening on the level of cartoons. And, you know, There's a huge interconnection that's occurring in our culture with the spirit world. Anybody who thinks there's no spirit world has got their head in the sand. Where does all this stuff come from? It surely isn't simply the imagination of men. But this bottomless pit, smoke arises out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened. Then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. So who are they commanded to harm? They're commanded to harm every living person except the 144,000. That tells me that the church cannot possibly be here in the world at this time, because God has made it clear to us he has not appointed us to wrath but to obtain salvation. And if we were here, we would be amongst that number, because we are not the descendants of Jacob. We would be amongst that number that would be tormented by these. This is one of the reasons why it's hard to imagine anyone believing that the church will be here during this time. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. Now, I've never been stung by a scorpion, but I've heard it is extremely painful. In those days, listen to this, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. This is a time when God is going to punish the world for its evil. Now, the smug atheist says, well, I don't believe in a God who'd do something like that. Well, too bad. He's going to do it anyway, whether you believe it or not. It's as simple as that. You know, you can sit and philosophize all day long. God is going to judge the world. He created the world. He created people for a specific reason and to do a specific thing. And when they consistently rebel against him, he punishes them. And he's going to punish the world for its evil. And you can disagree with that, not like that, say there is no God. You can do that all day long. It doesn't change anything. It is what it is. The shape of the locust was like horses prepared for battle. Now, listen, John is not describing here a tank or an armored vehicle or, you know, some sort of a modern weapon that he didn't have any way of really, you know, understanding in his day. So he's just doing his best and trying to describe it. These are demonic entities. These are creatures that he's describing that have been released out of the bottomless pit. They are locust. But listen to the description. Their shape was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold. Now, crown, not meaning they actually had a crown, but on the head itself. Something that looked like a golden crown. Their faces were like the faces of men, and they had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like lion's teeth. You know, again, watch some of the fantasy stuff, Lord of the Rings, some of that stuff, you know, even go back to Star Wars, they got some really funky creatures. Well, probably some similarity. But think about that. It's got the face like the face of a man. You know, sometimes you look under a microscope at a certain kind of a bug or something, and all of a sudden you're like, well, that looks like a person. But they had breastplates like the breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. Man, imagine that. You know, it's going to sound like, it will sound probably like helicopters or bombers or something like that. But that's not what he's describing. He's describing creatures that are let out of the bottomless pit. And they had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months, and they had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. Both of those words mean destroyer. And so they have a king over them. One woe is past. Behold, still two more woes are coming after these things. Wow. One woe is past.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Revelation in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part one of The Temple of the Antichrist. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Sealed of Israel. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT3279. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
So turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.